It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Welcome back. This is hour two of the show. We'll get to some Texan stuff. Didn't mention this today on this show, mostly because of my irritation with the conversations around the U.S. soccer, but there was big NBA news, relatively speaking. Guys not moving teams, but Donovan Mitchell has agreed to sign an extension with the Cavs. It's a 2+1 deal, so he will be locked in at least maybe just a name only for 3 years. And then he'll have a player option when the third year, when we get to the third year of his new extension. So he has 1 year left on his current deal, 2 more years where he should be locked in, and then another year where he can opt out. Of course, it's the NBA. So at any point in the next 7 months, he could be like, you know what? Actually, I'm out. I'm going to take my money, but this isn't working for me, so I'm going to leave. There was a report earlier, or at least you have to trade me. There was a report earlier, really during the playoffs, that Darius Garland was a guy who wouldn't want to come back if Donovan Mitchell was still around. We'll see if that actually means anything, or was that just rumor? So maybe with one Cav guard signing up for the long term, maybe another wants out. We'll see. But the Cavs keep Donovan Mitchell, so that trade for him with the Jazz looks better. The thought was always that he would play there and then ask out to go to a bigger market. The Cavs have done enough, whether it be making the playoffs a couple times and or signing Kenny Atkinson, that he's happy there. So Donovan Mitchell will be a Cav. At least the contract says he'll be a Cav for the next 3 years, and we'll see how long before he's upset and he becomes a star that wants to leave. As far as the Texans are concerned, we're getting closer to training camp. We're still a little bit away, but the guys are having conversations with media outlets. And the next guy on the list, not CJ, but Will Anderson. Will Anderson talked to Rich Eisen. And Will Anderson, we know, will be teamed with Danielle Hunter. Jonathan Grenard goes to Minnesota. The Texans signed Danielle Hunter, one of their premier pass rushers in football. And Will Anderson has another running mate to go out there and wreak havoc. So Rich Eisen asked Will Anderson about the partnership, and this is what Will Anderson had to say about what could be and just working with Danielle Hunter.
Well, he's been so supportive already. He's so smart. He knows a lot about the game, a lot about pass rush. Very talented, man, but his character speaks a lot. He's always willing to help the young guys, help me. He's been teaching us so much stuff since he's been there. And I'm excited to play alongside of him, man. This is going to be a really great year.
What's your general sense of how, you know, that might open things up for you or you for him? Like, what's your sense of
that?
Yeah,
teams are just going to have to decide. I mean, that's a double-digit stat guy every year. So teams are just going to be like, shoot, we got to double this guy. So we don't know about this guy. So it's going to be fun. I think we're going to cause a lot of havoc and, you know, disrupt a lot of stuff. So I'm excited to go to war with him.
That certainly is a hope. You got a young pass rusher who feels like with some seasoning, he's going to put it all together and be one of those guys who maybe not unblockable, but someone you have the game plan for every play. And then you have an accomplished guy on the other side. You got Denico Autry out there. So the Texans won't be lacking for pass rush when it comes to those three guys. And it might be a big deal when you really only have one corner you can depend on, and certainly some questions when it comes to safety. But that pass rush should be okay. D'Amico Ryans was at the Senior Bowl Hall of Fame ceremony over the weekend. And he talked about, you know, a lot of the belief in the Texans is about how surprising they were last year and some of the young talent and what it can do in year two. Well, D'Amico says his favorite thing about the NFL is that last year does not matter. You get to hit reset, start back from ground zero. He says he loves that. And going back to day one fundamentals, he gets into a lot of coach stuff, installing stuff, seeing our young players compete. Yeah, all the stuff coaches say. But you don't really think about it, but it is just a new year. Nothing you can bank on the talent that was displayed, but nothing about last year matters that much, whether it be because you got a new schedule or even the fact you've got multiple new players in major positions. It's not a completely different team because CJ's around, Tank and Nico around, but you look, your best pass rusher's gone from last year, at least stats-wise. Your linebacking core is different, at least when it comes to Blake Cashman out, Azeez Al-Shaair in. You got your other corner is gone. Safety position is in flux a little bit. I'm not saying they're starting from ground zero, I guess, but like D'Amico is saying, but the team will come together, and they started that process earlier in this offseason, and we'll see what they are. I do expect them to be good, but it is an interesting perspective to think about, hey, whatever we did last year, how much does that matter week one against the Colts? Not much. The Colts are going to believe we got our starting quarterback back for a full year, they hope, and we were a game behind you guys competing for a playoff spot in a do-or-die game just last year. So they're going to believe we're right there with you when it comes to competing in the AFC. I am excited about this Texans team because the momentum haven't been like this for years, and it feels like you've got a coach who kind of understands what it means to be a head coach in the NFL. And he's like, you know what? He's saying nothing we did in year one means that much when the helmets go on to start year two. So it'll be interesting to see the growth of the team and their development as they try to take another step. And we've had these conversations throughout the offseason about what's next for them. Schedule's tougher. The team's more talented. We'll see how that balances out. And a lot of people have them as a bit of a dark horse. But, you know, 9.5 wins, I think, is the over-under. And I think the schedule says if they win 10 wins and win the division again, it's a bigger step than what happened last year, even though the record would be the same, because you've done it against better teams, at least on paper.
Yeah, I think it's what's expected, but it is nice to hear that from D'Amico Ryans, because this is a team that has gotten so much love and will continue to get so much love before the season starts, to have a little bit of, hey guys, this is a different team.
Yeah.
All that stuff from last year, that's last year's
team. Yeah, starting running back is different. I mean,
new receiver.
Yeah, all of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it is, a lot of guys who weren't around for what you built last year.
It's a lot of big pieces.
Yeah, it's a lot of people we expect, like if we go with the NFL in usage, or we take the NBA's usage percentage to the NFL. Stephon Diggs, we expect to have a big usage number. Joe Mixon, starting running back. These are guys who weren't a part of what you did last year. And, of course, Danielle Hunter defensively.
Hunter Al-Shaair.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys expected a lot of who weren't around last year. We just immediately think they'll be better and they'll improve. We'll see. They did increase their talent level. There's no question about that. We'll just see how it all comes together as we get closer to the season in general. So we'll take, as I said, we take your call, 713-780-3776. We'll get back to what happened yesterday with the Astros and what might happen tonight as the Astros face the Blue Jays. A team in the Astros who's playing really well, 10-1 their last 11 games. Best team in baseball over that stretch. And there's a lot of positivity. We know watching them from day to day, people are starting to feel like this is the team they expected, even if it's coming from unexpected places. And there's also a article in ESPN or on ESPN from ESPN Insider discussing who the Astros should trade for. And it's a name that was brought up last week on ESPN 975. So we'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 975.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
We've talked about it on this show quite a bit, and it's not unique to us. If we've been pointing to one, beyond the injuries to pitching, the biggest hole with the Astros is probably at first base. You guys might feel differently, but throughout the year, we've discussed the lack of a legitimate, actual Major League first baseman. Whether you want Loperfido to be there, I get it. And he has proven, at least on the minor league level, to be just capable, certainly capable of being a first baseman. John Singleton, good story, the fact that he can contribute, but it tops off at a certain point, and you're looking for better there, despite some of the power he can provide on occasion. Well, was it Michael Schwab who was on here last week, and he discussed that a guy the Astros should be looking into is Vlad Jr. And Michael Schwab is not alone. ESPN brings up, and this is kind of how it's positioned, one player every MLB team should trade for or away. And in this case, particularly because the Astros are on this run, they're not suggesting anyone be traded away. They're suggesting Vlad Guerrero Jr. be traded for. And they talk about Abreu and just simply a lack of production at first. And with the Astros back in the race, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is the guy they think should be acquired. And they also look at the rest of the farm system when it comes to that position, and they don't think there's much there. At least major league ready. You know, down the line, who knows? I guess they consider Loperfido strictly an outfielder right now, despite what it appears to be that he might get more and more time there. The question always remains: now that they've gotten above 500 and they're squarely in the AL West race, do we have a real conversation about what it would take, Sean? Because the position on this show is get to 500, then we can talk about moves. They're there, so we can now have a serious conversation about this. Are they in a position where giving up what they're going to have to give up for Vlad Guerrero Jr. means, or at least makes sense? Or would you rather not decimate whatever's left of that farm system, which, to be honest with you, we see the updates all the time. There are enough Astro accounts keeping track that the guys that Dana Brown has drafted, they're playing pretty well. He may not have a big say in what happens on this level, but if we're attributing his decisions and the scouts' decisions to the guys they draft, not bad. So are we decimating the farm system even further for Vlad Guerrero Jr. acquisition, or we're riding with what we got?
To me, it depends on the price, because this still is...
Oh, you're being reasonable. Sorry. I'm looking for a yes or a no here. You're giving me reason and logic. Nah, but rewind. Go ahead, I guess.
No, rewind. Oh, just don't trade Joey Loperfido, please, or Bryce Matthews.
Oh, so anyone that they might want. Okay.
Okay. Oh. Rewind.
Okay.
No. Don't add to this group.
They're not good enough, and Vlad Guerrero's not going to put them over the top.
Oh, okay. So they need to replace the $19 million a year first baseman that they cut for nothing with another $19 million per year first baseman who's only signed for the rest of this year and then next year, and then guess what's going to happen?
He's going to walk away too?
He's going to walk away.
It will
be a crime against baseball.
This is what I'm looking for.
If the Houston Astros traded for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.,
I'd
prefer for them to sign or to trade for Vladimir Guerrero Sr.
I'd rather them acquire Vlad Sr., bring him out of retirement. This is what I'm looking for. I need you to channel all the soccer takes you see on Twitter, all that fake emotion people are throwing out there. Channel it into your baseball conversation.
Imagine if the best athletes in Houston play baseball.
What?
Imagine if North Shore High School had a baseball team. If Katy High School had a baseball team.
They don't have
team.
A baseball team?
I guarantee you they both have baseball
teams. Yeah, what are you doing? Katy ain't got a baseball team? What's that about? Come on.
Imagine if Silex had a baseball team.
I don't have to imagine. I've seen it. But to your point, yes. I need some of that. So I would, if can you guarantee, if you could guarantee me that Jim Crane would pay Vlad Guerrero Jr., then I'd be like, you know what? Sure. Sure. Okay. But right. Since you can't guarantee me that, no. No. Because if we got to have another conversation, like, well, imagine in the same offseason, it's Kyle Tucker and Vlad Guerrero Jr. Like, Alex Bregman, we all expect his time to come to an end. And then next year, we're having conversations about Tucker and Vlad Guerrero Jr.? Nah.
Who we are, or who they would have traded at least a prospect of some note for.
Sure.
The right to have Vlad Guerrero leave after next postseason. I don't know. It seems like a move that if this, and I guess you don't have to make it right now. No. If they play the month of July like they played the month of June, then I'm more open to it. At least seeing what we got there. But even then, if they keep playing the way they have,
why are we trading for them?
And that means someone at first base probably stepped up. I don't understand why they can't just like ride the hot hand when it comes to a first baseman. Where, hey, some days it's going to be Dubon, and then some days it's going to be
Singleton.
You get Lo Profeto every X amount of games there just to get his feet wet there, see what he's got, keep him in the lineup, and just go from there. I mean, if you really want to get crazy, you could. Caratini, you can throw out there. You can throw probably not Yiner this year, maybe other than like an odd game here or there. But there's just more options there that I think is worth exploring for a team that has four healthy starting pitchers right now. And I would be more in the mode of trying to get a decent starting pitcher, not even some ace. Nope, just a healthy arm. Just to make the rotation a little bit easier.
Between a fourth and a fifth starter, if that's what's needed, sure, you could shoot for higher, but someone who can provide some innings and we don't have to.
Can we get Brad Peacock? That's what I'm asking.
Someone of that level.
Give me. No,
or actually, Brad Peacock is who you're trying to trade for?
Probably not actually Brad Peacock. Okay. I'll have to look the last time he pitched, but just give me a Brad Peacock type.
Someone of that ilk who. So we don't have to look at, and credit to Sean Dubin for going out there and being really, really good on Sunday. Bullpen games are always make you choke up a little bit. Ooh, this might go poorly for us, and how does it set up the rest of the series or the next couple games if we're using so many guys? So, yeah, understood. I would lean that way, too. If there's a pitcher of you know, medium talent who won't cost very much to acquire, I welcome that. And obviously, a lot of it will have to depend on the prognosis and the timetable for the likes of Verlander and Garcia. And I'm not mentioning the other guy's name because why would I? That's more fantastical than, hey, what if Tyreek Hill played soccer?
I mean, the reason I don't really put a ton of stock into Garcia and the other guy coming back is because as we've seen through the first half of this year, because that's what people were saying before the season started, was the reason they don't need any starting pitching or any more starting pitching is because they have Garcia and the other guy coming back. You need to actually survive to that point.
You have to get there.
You need to have enough pitchers to get to the reinforcements.
And what does it mean when those reinforcements come back? What has happened to your starting pitching? The ones who got you there, will they have enough in the tank afterwards?
Exactly. Ronel Blanco is going to throw the most pitches he's ever thrown.
Yeah.
As a probably maybe in his life in a calendar year, but definitely as a professional.
And are we going to be able to depend on that guy? And we've seen the performances have, I don't want to say shaky, but the performances have not been as consistent. Well, really, since the suspension, does it have to do with being off rhythm, or does it have to do something with just a guy who's pitching more frequently and bigger situations than he's ever had to do in his professional career? So those are still some questions that need to be answered. But As far as who people think, at least one publication thinks the Astros should acquire, that person is Vlad Guerrero Jr. And he and he's hot right now, by the way. He was the player of the week in the AL, hitting 500, 4 home runs, 17 RBI. So he's going good right now. But he's not the only one in that series going good. We talked about the Astros in their 10-1 stretch in their last 11. Here are some of the guys as far as their batting averages are concerned. Yiner's hitting 350. Altuve's hitting 344. Yordan, well, actually, this is even longer than that. Since Tucker went down, Yordan's hitting 316, and Bregman's hitting 304. So the bats have stepped up in the wake of Tucker's injury. And that's another guy. When is Kyle Tucker coming back? Some baseball activity is happening. The hope, I guess, would be that he's back by mid-July, maybe a little bit afterwards. But he's slowly working his way back, and slowly is the operative word, as the bone bruise has been a big deal, maybe bigger than we thought. But we were all happy that it wasn't broken. He's been suffering, and we hope to see Kyle Tucker back in the lineup shortly. We got a couple more segments to go here. Sean has a list because, you know, SEC, they're the bigger conversation going on with Oklahoma and Texas joining the conference. Well, the conference they left, the voting for the winner of the Big 12, we have that. We have the rank, we have the media vote for who's going to finish first and who's going to finish last. I'll give you a clue. Number one is a newcomer. And I imagine the last place team. I don't even want to imagine. I'm going to guess in the next segment. And I'll give you an update on a Big 12 player who's in trouble with the law, and maybe we should blame a video game for it, because we blame video games for a lot of other stuff. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, I want to talk about MyBookie. If you want to bet on who wins the Big 12, you can go to MyBookie for that. Just go to MyBookie.ag. They're the place to go if you are interested in making a little money on a wager. So whether it's betting on the Big 12 winner, or maybe how well Oklahoma will do in the SEC, we have options for you. Just go to MyBookie for that. So we got soccer coming up a little later. Later, the Netherlands, another big country, is playing in a knockout round game. They haven't looked great in the group stage, but they have a shot to advance to a quarterfinal. Maybe you like the Dutch today. Go to MyBookie for that. If you are someone who doesn't enjoy sports betting, why wouldn't you? But if you don't, they do allow you to play in their live casino. Card games, if you love those, poker, blackjack, baccarat, and they have live dealers as well. So it's a place where you can bet on anything, anywhere, anytime, and use that sign-up bonus, bet975, or it also applies to existing customers where you can use that promo code to further your money. So bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are. No, not really.
Okay. Welcome back to the show. It's been a big couple days for departures when it comes to teams in college football. Texas and Oklahoma are officially in the SEC. Well, the Big 12 still has to go on. I know, surprisingly, they're going to try to still play football in that conference despite the exits. And they have voted on who should win the conference. Who is going to win the conference, I guess. We know Utah's new to the conference, Arizona State, and Colorado. Sean said a newcomer to the conference was voted in first place. I imagine it's the guy who heads the team we talked about yesterday, who is not announced his retirement, but has named a coach in waiting. Morgan Scali, the defensive coordinator for Utah, will eventually take over for Kyle Whittingham. Yes. So Kyle Whittingham, though no plans to retire, that has a coach in waiting, and the media thinks his team is going to win the conference.
Yes, Utah's number one, I think, helped by having a great head coach,
Kyle Whittingham. And a coach in waiting?
and who has no plans to retire, or at least to our knowledge, has no timeline to retire, but also has a succession plan in place. Maybe he watched House of the Dragon, and he was like, you know,
he needs an heir.
Viserys could have really, if he really was stronger with his heir, you know, things would have had to happen the way they did. Anyway,
I can get into.
We don't have to.
I can get into my support of Viserys and pushing back on, he could have done more. You mean like kill everyone who didn't agree with him? I guess he could have done
just,
that.
I just like backseat driving.
Understood.
Viserys.
Fantasy kings. Yeah.
They just write down on a piece of paper what he does. And then I can go,
stupid.
So yes, Kyle Whittingham, Cam Rising, Morgan Scally, I guess.
Let's not pretend like Cam Rising doesn't have a connection to this show. Your doppelganger, Cam Rising.
Not really a doppelganger.
Well, the hair and the facial hair provides enough cover for me to make that comparison.
You know who you look like, Dale?
Go ahead. Compare me to a black person. Let's see how it goes for you.
Number two, Kansas State.
Even without Will Howard?
Yeah.
Avery Johnson
hours.
Not great on TikTok, Avery Johnson. People are going to make fun of him when they find out about those TikToks.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So. He's lucky for him.
He's not Jared McCain level.
Okay, good. Good.
But he ain't great. I mean, no one is Jared McCain at this point. Yeah.
Also, no one's good.
No, that's true.
If you just tell me a college football player is on TikTok or a college kid is on TikTok, I'm going to be like, chances are it sucks, right?
That's very true.
Number three, Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Speaking of that, that leads me into this. We'll get to the rest of the rankings. Thanks for that lead-in. I kept mentioning a player who was featured in the EA college football game that's coming out in now a couple weeks. First one of those guys in trouble with the law, Ollie Gordon. You mean, what are you talking about? Well, in their gameplay trailer, he was the first player seen. He hit a spin move in the open field and kept going on his way. He has been arrested on suspicion of a DUI. Ollie Gordon, maybe the best back in all of college football, is in trouble with the law. It's not great. Suspicion of DUI, never good. We all know the dangers that can lead to it if you're just unlucky. It's lucky that he didn't hurt anyone, but he will pay a bit of a consequence. I don't know the policy at Oklahoma State, how they treat these things. Will he get suspended for a game? I don't know. Will he be? I don't. Just don't know how Oklahoma State does it. We know some schools got no tolerance on that thing, and he might miss a couple games. Oklahoma State may treat him differently, and we'll see how it all plays out. Presumed innocent, right? But arrested on suspicion of DUI. It was in the Oklahoma City area, where he swerved his car into an adjacent lane twice and was caught speeding 17 miles per hour over the speed limit of 65. So some of the things that were found in his car, once the trooper detected an odor of alcohol, Gordon admitted he had an open bottle of vodka and tequila, which according to the affidavit were found half empty. Someone's very funny said, Lisa wasn't, hey, it could have been, what did someone say? Someone said something like it. I guess it's worse than half full. I guess it could have been found half
it's
full.
It's a very the police really putting their thumb on the scale for saying these bottles are half empty, as opposed to like those bottles were like half full.
Hey, we can see the police
half empty implies that like, he was chugging them when the officer pulled up.
Half full suggests that he barely got to the bottle by the time he was arrested.
Or it's like they're in there and they're. Been open, but come on, they're from the night before.
You know? My imagination
was just moving from one place to another. No, half empty means he was drinking them like the guy in, I guess, Stan in the Eminem song, Stan.
So, inform me on this open bottle of tequila and alcohol. I get an open can of beer. Okay, it's open. He popped the top. He opened the can. So, does that imply that there's no cap on it, or it's implied that it's been opened? When they say that,
I assume it because it's too. If it was only a bottle of either vodka or tequila, I would assume that just one of them, like the only bottle, was open, and it probably looks worse for our friend Ollie Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's two bottles of different kind of liquor, I have to assume that it just means that they have been opened. They weren't both open
with no cap on it.
Yes,
and he might have just put one down from swigging. Yeah,
I would. That's just what I assume because, like, who drinks two drinks at the same time of anything?
Yeah.
Like, who, like, even you can make a Sprite and 7-Up. Like, who drinks two of them at the same time?
Yes, who does that? He was arrested on complaint of DUI, transport of an open container of alcohol, failure to maintain single-lane traffic, and speeding.
That's bad.
Yes, all things bad. He had a registered blood alcohol level of .11 and .10. So I guess they got him twice and they asked him twice. Legal limit is .08. So hey, we're gonna do this once and then we're gonna do it again to make sure. And both times you're above. So it's like the combine when you run the 40.
But they just take your lowest time.
Yeah. Hey, we're gonna do you a favor here. We're gonna take your lowest time.
Oklahoma State, I will say, Ollie Gordon will not be suspended for 4 games.
No.
He will be suspended for less than 4 games.
Oh, you've seen the schedule?
Yes. They open it up with South Dakota State. Then they go, they play Arkansas in Stillwater, it looks like. And they go to Tulsa to play Tulsa. And then they welcome the Utah Utes on September 21st.
4 games? Does he even get suspended for 2? They got Arkansas coming to town.
Very true. Very true.
He might just miss one, if he misses any at all. We'll see how it's handled now that he has been arrested. And like we said, presumed innocent, although it looks bad for Ollie.
Looks bad. No one can say it doesn't look bad.
Yeah.
And then after the Utah game, they play at Kansas State. So they play the 2 top teams in the Big 12. Before the end of September.
Look, I can't influence the people Stillwater, obviously. But if he is suspended for a game, when he is announced for game 2, don't give him a standing ovation. You know how crowds are. They're like, yeah, Ollie's back. He doesn't get a standing ovation because of something he did to himself. Yeah. Now, maybe we see the body cam footage and they are completely unfair to him. I don't know. But as it stands right now, do yourselves a favor. Keep those paddles that you like to bang against the walls in that stadium of yours that gives no room for anyone who's sitting on the bench. But don't give him any applause because he's back in the lineup.
No.
Refrain, because realize he did something stupid in the city of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
So Oklahoma State is what, 3 or 4?
3.
Three.
We can zoom.
Who's last?
We can zoom through.
Okay. I'm going to guess last.
Okay, guess.
Is it a new member of the conference?
Yes.
Arizona State or Colorado. I'm going to go. They're going to hype Colorado up enough that they don't have them last. Arizona State?
Arizona State is last.
Yeah.
And then the next 3 are all new members from last year.
So it's UCF, the Cougs, and Cincinnati in some order?
No.
So who's the other person?
BYU.
BYU. BYU. So BYU is... I'm going to go...
Yeah, just order those 3 how you think they're ordered. Top to bottom.
I know people like Willie Fritz, but I'm going to go... Ooh, you're right. I'm going to go UCF, BYU, Cougs.
You forgot Cincinnati.
Well, that's 4. All right. UCF... BYU, Cougs, Cincinnati.
No, UCF is 8th.
Okay, so they're the best of the bunch.
Yes. It is 13 BYU, 14 Cincinnati, 15 University of Houston.
So second to last.
And then 12th is Baylor. 11th is Colorado.
Okay.
And then 10th, TCU. They don't take head-to-head into account?
not what happened last year, apparently.
From 9 months ago?
Yeah. Apparently they don't do that.
Okay.
Teams can change.
All right.
So where do the likes of Kansas and the rest?
Kansas, back to the top. Kansas is 4, Arizona 5, Iowa State 6, West Virginia, UCF, Texas Tech, TCU, Colorado.
Texas Tech, now an Adidas school because of their affiliation with Patrick Mahomes.
And Patrick Mahomes logo A. Patrick Mahomes has a logo. That's news to me.
I did not know that. No.
2 is going to be on the field.
I did see that. If you missed the reveal, Patrick Mahomes, because before now, Texas Tech was an Under Armour school, so Patrick Mahomes would wear his Tech gear, but he would have a piece of tape over the Under Armour logo with an Adidas kind of written by hand on the tape. So that's how they did their reveal. They had a either it was digitally or real. I didn't really take a look at it closely, but they had a giant Adidas, well, it was tape and a diet, and I guess in Patrick Mahomes' handwriting, Adidas on the tape that was covering from like maybe the 40 to the 40 on the field, and that got peeled off digitally, I believe, and it showed the Adidas logo and the Patrick Mahomes logo to announce that they're now in the conference. And the uniforms look pretty good. They're basic. They're Texas Tech classic uniforms and stuff. Adidas unveiled a new template for Tech. I think maybe Miami will wear it too. Tech obviously getting it because they're new to Adidas, and the uniforms look pretty good. They're going to look, I don't know what else to say other than they look like Tech. They're a classic Tech uniform that you might remember from, like, I don't know, the other Ricky Williams years. Everyone remember there was an other Ricky Williams who was a pretty good running back in the Big 12? Sean doesn't. He just knows of the one. I think his number was 35, Ricky Williams. He's like, really? There's another guy with that name who's even better than me at a bigger school? Kind of crap is that? He was a good back, just overshadowed by the Longhorn. We got one more segment here to go before we wrap it up. What can we talk about? Look, I can't predict because I haven't looked at my rundown in the last 20 minutes or so. But we'll have some stuff to get to before we wrap it up. And of course, Gallant and George are up next, followed by the Killer Bees. But before that, one more segment with us. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So, continuing something from last segment, I was just looking up the stats from the other Ricky Williams at Tech. In 1998, he ran for over 1,500 yards, had 13 touchdowns. You know who was doing something in 1998? The other rookie in his final season at Texas ran for over 2,100 yards and 27 touchdowns. So if you're the Texas Tech Ricky Williams, you got to be like, come on, man. It was his best year ever. He kind of petered out after that. Maybe injuries took their toll. I don't remember exactly what happened to him. But you rushed for over 1,500 yards and 13 TDs in conference, you would think to yourself, you know what? I'm probably not going to win the Doak Walker because back then a lot of running backs were putting up numbers, but maybe the best running back in the conference, I might win that. I might be, you know, they probably took two, so he might have been a first-team All-Big 12 player as far as the running back position. But Ricky Williams at Texas was putting together a Heisman-type year, and you got to be, you got to have the worst of luck because no one is thinking about you when Ricky Williams has gone off, unless you're a Tech fan.
You said it was 1998?
1998, yeah. Over 1,500 yards, 13 touchdowns.
Ricky Williams, Texas, was first team, and so was Devin West from Mizzou. Ricky Williams, Texas Tech, was second
team. Okay, so Devin West robbed us of a Ricky Williams, yes. First team, all Big 12, yeah, at the time.
It is confusing because it's like, wait, why is Mizzou in this conference?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Corby Jones got a second place votes. Come on.
Yeah, the biggest moment in Mizzou's Big 12 history is them losing Nebraska when that Nebraska player kicked the ball up in the air. And Doe, I think it was one of Scott Crouch's years. No, Scott Frost's years. Eric Crouch. I'm mixing together my option Nebraska quarterbacks. Scott Frost was the quarterback then.
Wait, and Texas A&M was in the Big 12?
Yeah. They won a Big 12 title that year.
Wow.
Then they beat Kansas State.
I'm just on the all conference team website. Hold on.
Devin West, I'm going to have to ask you not to be good in 1998. That doesn't help. That doesn't help my agenda.
Just take it down a notch.
Yeah.
Right?
Why did you have to be that much better? So Texas Tech, a new Adidas school, still in the Big 12, and not expected to do great. That's a team who's putting a lot of money into NIL, so they're trying. And I imagine the connection with Patrick Mahomes will help a little bit. I think they're going to feature him in a lot of the advertising for the move to Adidas. I'm sure you're going to see Patrick Mahomes everywhere as Tech is trying to. They won't fill the gap of Oklahoma and Texas leaving, but there's there's a space there for someone to take over as
perennial favorite.
I don't know if Tech can ever be considered that. I don't know if they'll ever get there just because of where they're located. Probably can't recruit to that level. But there's a spot there to be the maybe the best Big 12 team in Texas.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is that if you look at the Big 12 and you hold the fact that they're in Lubbock against them, but you look at all the other teams of the Big 12. You have UCF in Orlando and TCU in Fort Worth, U of H in Houston.
Yeah. But you got Stillwater and Manhattan and Lawrence and and Waco. Yeah.
If you're recruiting Texas, how different is it? Can Oklahoma State walk into a high school in Texas and be like, you don't want to go to Lubbock. Where you want to go is Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know much about Stillwater, how appealing it is.
I don't think that's that compelling.
They've been a better program than Tech for years, I guess. And I guess still the best players will go to Texas anyway. They don't mind playing the SEC. But for people or players maybe in, let's say, that mid-tier, or let's say 3 to low 4-star range. That
DFW low 4-star.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe Tech becomes a place they want to play if Texas is maybe dipping more into SEC country. Although I'm sure the focus will still be on the great state of Texas. There is a spot there for someone to decide we're going to be the best in the Big 12. And maybe it'll just be Utah, because why not?
I don't know. Let's see how long Kyle Whittingham has.
No timetable.
I think there's a chance that this is a this is Mac Brown level hilarious of having a coach in waiting.
And he never leaves.
And then, you leave four years later.
The other guy has to leave to go get a job because the head coach never leaves.
I don't know. Maybe at Big 12 Media Days, which I imagine is pretty soon, if they already have the list out. But maybe at Big 12 Media Days, he's definitely going to get asked about it. And maybe he goes like, yeah, this is my last year. But for the time being, I can't imagine him retiring in the next 2 years. Right? Kyle Whittingham?
No.
He's got at least 3.
I mean, it might be one of those shock things. Chris Peterson, out of nowhere, decided he didn't want to coach anymore. So it
Bob
could be
Stoops.
It could be one of those things, but I would doubt it. Seems like Kyle Whittingham is going strong, and Utah, the favorite to win the Big 12. One more thing before we wrap it up. And as you know, the Killer Bees are after Gallant and George, so Gallant and George are up next. Klay Thompson, no longer a Warrior. You in this town are Rocket fans for the most part. So he was one of the people who tortured you for years. Now he gets to go to a place you hate even more. Dallas. We can't get Klay out of our lives. He goes from Golden State, who was they were pretty much done as a contender. They were willing to trade for Paul George until the Clippers said, nah, we don't want to do that. So they're trying to hang on like grim death. They're trying to find a way to stay relevant, and once the Paul George trade fell through, maybe they're going to take a backseat, and Klay had already decided he was done with them. But he joins the Mavericks, and what does it mean? As much as Kyrie and Luka are going to get, I think all the Mavericks need him to do is be able to knock down the shots that Derrick Jones Jr. and P.J. Washington couldn't in the finals. Those guys were really good leading up to that point. It's the reason they made the finals, because they shot above, anything they had shown previously in their careers. It was the reason Oklahoma City played them a certain way. It just didn't work out for Oklahoma City because they got flamethrower P.J. Washington as opposed to what we have seen from him throughout his career. So if Klay's just going to take those shots, and honestly, I think Klay more than anything is going to be a playoff guy. What he does in the regular season, I don't think will matter much. Think Ray Allen. Back when Ray Allen was joining the Heatles late in his career, we're gonna probably not play you as many minutes as normal because we want you around for the playoffs, and it's a nice addition, but I think it's specific to playoff series. Can he knock down the shots that Kyrie and Luka are going to get him? And if he can do that, certainly an added addition for the Mavericks. But unfortunately for us, Klay won't get out of our lives. 4 times a year, we're going to see Klay Thompson. Cool. Great. We get more of I can't wait for Jalen Green to say something to him and Clay to point at his hand and go four. Does it hit the same if you're doing it on a different team? If you're doing it for the Mavericks or the Warriors, does it even hit the same?
After the Warriors were like, no thanks.
Yeah, you definitely aren't getting us to five, so get out of here. But Klay Thompson, a Dallas Maverick. We're done. Gallant and Georgia are up next. And if we're done, what does that mean, Sean?
We did it!
We did do it. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
ESPN 97.5.
Please stand by.